Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. It's my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law that you watch me cover on television every day into the world of theater and the arts and magic, which is kind of today's little talk here, because I'm talking to some of the leading cast members of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child playing at the Nederlander Theater through February 1st. Now, this is part two of the interviews, because you might say, oh, I think I saw this interview. No, you didn't. You saw my interview with a lot of the younger generation Harry Potter folks. We got the old ones here now. No,
the youngest of the young, Larry Ando. That's yeah, exactly. The youngest.
So true, right?
Absolutely.
From Scrooge to a million different roles. Yeah. Anyway, let me introduce everybody to you. Joining us, John Skelly, who plays Harry Potter himself. Although I don't know, you know, it's kind of your kid that takes the spotlight here, there, John, because we're looking a lot at that generation. But you are, of course, really critical, as is Ebony Blake, who plays Hermione Granger, mm-hmm. and Matt Mueller, who I told when I saw you in the theater, you've completed my bingo card of Mueller interviews.
That's right.
That actually, Matt, was not true because I didn't have time to clarify it. But at that time, I had done the national touring cast with your sister Abby for Beautiful.
Yeah.
And the morning we did the TV show for that, she was sick.
Oh,
so if
she's better now. So that's
Yes, that was sure. And so this is good. So if you want to have her join us in the Harry Potter conversation, that would complete my
Brilliant.
Interactions with the Mueller.
That'll be part three. I'll get on that for part three.
Yeah, you've got yeah. That's a whole separate thing. That's going to just be, we'll call it the Mueller Bunch or something like
there
that.
There you go. Good.
Anyway, hi, everybody. First of all, if I have it right, you were all in the Broadway production, right? Coming to Chicago, and this is not the first time for any of you.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, yeah. In different iterations, right? Yeah,
exactly. And by the way, Ebony, I think you and I met because you did the first tour of Book of Mormon.
I did.
And you were here in Chicago.
You know what? I joined at a different time. So I was on that, but I maybe just missed you.
Okay. Were you in the Nick Rouleau, Ben Platt?
Not with Ben. I was with Nick Rouleau.
Okay. That, by the way, John, was Ben before he became Ben Platt. Anyway, let's talk about Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which is amazing. So when I talked to your fellow cast members first time around, I had not seen the show because it was just prior to opening. And now I've seen the show. And John, let me come to you. For those who maybe didn't watch our first part of the interview and maybe don't know a lot about Harry Potter, catch us up, because you are Harry Potter, but this is 19 years after the last story was out. So fill viewers and listeners in to what this Harry Potter, where it starts, where it takes us.
Yeah, well, the story picks up right at the place where the final book ends, which is the epilogue where Harry and Ginny and Hermione and Ron are taking their own kids to Hogwarts, to platform 9 3/4. They're seeing them off, and Harry's middle son, Albus, is a little worried about what house he might be sorted into, and what if he's a Slytherin, and what does that mean? And he's Albus is dealing with what it's like to have a famous father, and we get to see this new generation of wizards and witches go to Hogwarts, and we also get to see the struggles of what it means to be a parent in this world, and what it means to be a minister of magic, and you know, of course, adventure ensues, and lots of magic and fun, and it's a real delight.
And you mentioned Larry Yando, and the truth is, so many of his characters are technically sort of gone, right? So by the time this happens, and yet the story finds a way to let us see him in all the various formations. I'm not even sure the audience realizes he's in as many roles as he's in, but he's just an amazing. I mean, just I know he grew up in New York, but we call him Chicago's very own, like Matt. I mean, it's just you just sort of belongs to Chicago. And Ebony, in your role, I got to tell you, what's amazing to me is just, and I want to ask everybody about the magic. But I want to ask you, were you a Harry Potter book or movie fan before this?
Both, actually. I really and truly was. I was a bit sort of, I mean, I guess there is really no age range for such a beautiful, classic, timeless story. But I came to the books, you know, my freshman year of college. and I sort of breezed through them. And so by about the time the sixth and the seventh books came out, I was devouring them as soon as they came out. So yeah, I was a fan of both, of Emma Watson and everybody that was in the movie. So I really came to it as a fan.
Matt, let's talk about Ernest Shackleford. Oh, no, that was another Mueller that played that role. That was Andrew. I'm sorry. I'm having too much fun with the whole Mueller family.
It was a great show. I loved it.
You got to see. I was there the night your parents were there. So,
Really? Got to see them.
So tell us about Ron Weasley, the role you play, because he's a friend that's been around a long time.
It's a lot of fun. All these characters, everyone sort of knows them so well, and everyone has their own idea in their head of who these people are, which can be a little intimidating, I think, in certain ways. But getting to the heart of who these characters are and how they sort of love each other and interact with each other, and like John was saying earlier, how do these characters that we know so well sort of like exist in this world where they're now the Minister of Magic or they're a parent, and also just they're adults. Like, we know these characters as kids,
right?
And so getting to experience them as adults is really fascinating and kind of terrifying on a lot of levels, but also really beautiful, because I think it speaks to kind of like why we all kind of, if you're a fan or not, like why you love the books in the first place.
Were you also a book and or movie fan?
I'm sort of in the camp of Ebony's experience, because my younger brother was kind of in the pocket for when they were all coming out. So I came to it later, probably in college at some time. And the final book hadn't come out when I had started reading them. So it wasn't until I did the production in New York that I like went back to the beginning and read them all.
Ah.
So, Ron's just, I think of Ron, I mean, he's the goofy one. And he's the one that sort of like cracks the jokes and wears the sweaters and makes sure that everyone is okay. Right. And he's also just, I don't know. I feel like he's a big heart. They all are, but he's sort of the one like coming up to like, I don't know, grab you around the shoulder, be like, everything okay? Just check in, and then sort of, you know, go off and do something else.
Yeah. By the way, Matt, is Larry the local tour guide for everybody who's first experiencing Chicago?
Oh man. I'd say Larry, we were talking about Green Mill the other night, and a bunch of other things. I think Larry's got me beat. I think Larry's got me beat on that.
Okay.
But, yeah. And also all the young people in the cast are doing a fine job of like getting out there, and like, I'm learning much more from them, I think, than I may be able to tell them about what Chicago's about. So
there you go. Well, they can count on you for the pizza recommendations and that.
Absolutely.
Right. What is your favorite? Lou Malnati?
Well, here's the thing. My favorite place it exists out in, gosh, Oak Brook now. There was a place right on the border of Chicago and Evanston called Gulliver's.
Oh, you're Gulliver. It's gone.
It's gone. It's been here my entire life, and it's gone in the past couple years. So RIP Gulliver's on Howard Street, but it's still one of my favorites, and you can get it out in Oak Brook. There's still a location out in Oak Brook. So I've told these two that I'm going to take them out there at some point.
Oh, I didn't know it was in Oak. So that one's still there, because the one.
Yeah, that one's still there.
Side story. I agreed to do this talk for a nursing home, a seniors home.
Yeah. Facility.
And, but the deal was, I knew that I could see that they were close to Gulliver's. And so I'm like, well, I'll do that, but I want pizza at Gulliver's. And then as I'm driving on my way there, I passed the closed up Gulliver's. I went, I'm not doing the speech. I drove home. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, fair enough. I understand. I totally understand. I felt the same way. I was like, I'm going to have to move. I don't know what to do.
So John, a couple things for you. One, I actually hadn't thought of asking, but I'm going to in just a second. But first, your experience, books and movies, since you are Harry Potter.
Yeah, I did not read them growing up. I'm sad to say I sort of came to it late. I had seen the movies. I remember watching them. I think I was my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, was in grad school, and I was visiting her, and she was in school all day, and so I was just binging the movies in her apartment. And then when I got the the job of understudying Harry on Broadway, I immediately, of course, you know, got all the books, read them all straight through, fell in love with them, you know, have since read them multiple times. So yeah, that's sort of my way that I found my way into it.
By the way, for those who either know one or the other, how true are the movies to the books?
I think they're pretty true. I mean, you know, they, of course, they can't put everything in there, but I would say for the most part, they're really pretty faithful adaptations. I'm excited, curious to see, you know, what's going to happen with this apparent new series on HBO and what they're going to do. And it sounds like exciting, you know, if it's a series, you can add more of the story back in. So,
and have you been cast in it yet?
I wish. No.
Not yet.
And John, here's the question. This is what I was going to ask you, which is, and I've not asked this before, like literally struck me based on something Matt just said, but which is, could this story, when I didn't know that much about Harry Potter. So when I came in, I saw that whole younger generation, I was thrown because I thought like you guys are the star. You are the stars of the thing, but you know, that the story would be yours. And could this story, could this play exist without the younger generation? Could it be further adventures of you all 19 years later?
I mean, I suppose it could, but I think the what I love about the story that John Tiffany and Jack Thorne have come up with is that it's a story about parents sort of introducing that next generation to something that is beloved to them. And that's sort of what happens when parents bring their kids to the show. I think it's kind of, it really mirrors that. So it's amazing because you see these, you know, people who are about our age who grew up with the books, they kind of came out, they grew up with the characters, and now they are, you know, around 40 or so, and they're bringing their children to this play, introducing them to this world. And you see these kids get so excited about seeing these characters and seeing these new younger characters and that they can relate to. And so I think it's sort of, it's a wonderful way to sort of introduce a new generation, not only to Harry Potter, but also to the theater, which I think is really important. It's incredible to see these kids and you think, oh, this is going to be their first play. And I can't believe I get to share that with them.
That's so true. In fact, Ebony, it is sort of like, I mean, the brilliance of doing this play around now, it started in West End and Broadway and all that in two parts and all the changes it's gone through. But the bottom line is, as John is saying, you have this whole generation of people who are now old enough to be working and going to the theater. And this is part of their evening life. So for them, it's a little maybe kind of like nostalgia, but as John said, but they're also introducing the next generation.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite things, you know, coming to work and, you know, sort of we have little Easter eggs dropped throughout the entire show. And we'll mention a character that's not necessarily in the show, but they're a really big presence in the story. And you'll hear somebody in the audience go, oh, you know, so it's like there's that tiny point of connection the entire night.
And who is waiting for you outside the stage door at night? I mean, we couldn't do that for a long time during COVID, but when you come out, is it all the little kids? Because the opening night when I was there, there were little Harry Potters dressed up and all those, you know, and they were 50. No, I'm kidding. But they, you know, people are sort of in their costumes and stuff. And I myself wanted to buy a magic wand, you know, but is it kids waiting for you? Is it their parents or is it the parents bringing the kids pretending it's for the kids, but it's really for them?
I think the answer is D, all the above. You know, there was a little girl that came last night. And she had on her Gryffindor get up. And it was so funny because I saw her sort of connect and go, oh, she played Hermione. Because as I was walking away, she says to her mom, she's like, no, wait, was that Hermione? And the mom goes, yes, it was. So it's just a treat to see anybody that sort of comes to the back and had an appreciation for what we did, because I appreciate them for being there.
I just realized I bought one of the Harry Potter scarves and it's like right upstairs. I should have worn it for this.
But it would have covered up your tie.
Yeah, that's true. It actually would match the tie because I bought the green one.
Oh, nice. Oh, very good.
Part Matt, three. Talk about the magic. Of course, one of your colleagues in the show actually is a magician, which I think is sort of cool.
Yes.
But the magic of this show, I mean, even if you know, I know in my review of the show, I kind of made the comment, even if you don't know anything about Harry Potter, and a lot of people don't, I mean, you know, it's just the way it is. Right. You come and you watch this thing and you're just jaw drop. That was the phrase they used for me in the TV, the jaw dropping, mind bending jaw dropping is part of the quote they took from me.
Yeah.
But it is true. And my reference there was really to the magic that goes on. Can you want to talk about that a little bit? Because this isn't like card trick.
No, it's right. And that's those are fun, too. Right. I mean, magic is just fun. Bottom line. I mean, there's so many things we can't say. Right. But and there are still tricks, illusions in this show that do legitimately still make my jaw drop every time I see them, or I know how a lot of them are done at this point. And it's still magic. I mean, I think that's another part of it. Even when you know how it's done, because all of the, it's, yeah, they're illusions and they're tricks, they're magic tricks, but it's all so theatrical and also part of the story that it's not like, here comes a big magic trick we're going to do. One of the reasons it's so jaw-dropping and kind of inspiring and electric is because it's all story-based and it's things happening to these characters we love, or all of a sudden, you know, we're something amazing is happening and we like feel it in our bodies in the theater, or we're surprised by someone showing up that we didn't think we were going to see. Again, card tricks are cool. It's like, is this your card? Like, how did you do that? But when it's story based and when you're along for the ride in that way, it's that much more satisfying. And I think that much more exciting. That's from my experience of the show, like it's always been a part of that. I still remember the first time I ever saw it. And one of the illusions in particular, every single night, the first time it happens, I can hear the audience go, oh, and I know exactly what that's like, because I can't not make that sound when I see it happen. So, you know, yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah.
And by the way, do you know how everything is done just because you're in the show and so you see it? Or was there sort of a request of like, we need to know how this is done? I mean, how did that?
Well, there's certain things, because there are certain illusions that we as actors in the show are part of. So we have to know. I do think there are still some illusions that I don't know 100% how they're done. And I like it that way. Because I don't necessarily need to know exactly how it's done to get the payoff. Right. Yeah. And it's a little more fun that way to not know exactly how it's done. Yeah.
Well, and John, just follow up there, because I interview a lot of magicians on the show, because I, you know, we have a lot, as you know, close up magic was invented here in Chicago. And so between Chicago Magic Lounge and the Magic Parlor, and I hope on a night off, you get to go enjoy some of the magic places that are around here, because they're amazing. But the point is, whenever I interview a magician or some of them are mind readers and all that, they all tell me, Paul, if you knew how we do what we do, you would be disappointed. That every one of them is like, seriously, that's it? Is that, John, I'm just curious, you're all nodding, but John, is that what you found? Like when you found out how some of these amazing things were done, were you like, oh?
Well, I think it's slightly different, because I knew that I was going to be the one to get to perform them. So sometimes I was like, oh, that's how it's done? Oh, now I have to learn that. Oh, wow. But I do think it's true that part of what makes it so joyous is the mystery, is the wondering. And so, you know, the magic team who taught us all the tricks have said to us, you know, if anybody asks, you know, just that's exactly what we have to tell them, because it is true that you have to preserve some of that mystery. And that is kind of the joy of magic, as you think, well, how? And even if, you did know how it's done, it does somehow, it just takes away a little bit of that that magic.
So I was going to spend 20 minutes going through each of the illusions and ask you how each of them is done. Shall I skip that part of the interview? So, and Ebony, was this stuff created? I actually don't know this question. Some, you're saying things that are triggering me, but were there magicians involved in doing this, or is it really not? Is that not the skill? It's really these, you know, magical stage illusion people that have to come in. Do you know, like, who was involved in that?
No, absolutely. The team who created the illusions, each of them in their own right are really, really gifted and talented magicians. And so then they sort of come together in this brain trust and they come up with these things. And even with this iteration of the show, our tour, there were still new illusions that they brought. And I was like, no, I've been a part of this thing for a couple years. And, you know, they would show us new things. And I went, oh, okay, great. Yeah, great. I'm on board.
Well, here's a fun question. Has there been an illusion they've wanted to create, but to this point have not been able to? Like, we just don't know how to make that happen?
because I'm such a fan of our team, I'm going to say no. I think they can.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's more towards in the realm of like there's too much stuff that they can do, and they had to sort of like pick and choose to decide like what is going to be best for the story.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like an embarrassment of riches, and it's like, okay, what do we really need here?
Yeah.
And well, the amazing part of this too is, you know, it's one thing to do this stuff in a movie, you know, because we just make that happen. I don't know how Spielberg does what he does, but he does it. And it's all done with trickery and cameras and stuff, but you can't do that on stage. I don't know if any of you have seen yet. It started here soon opening on Broadway. It's probably in previews already, but Death Becomes Her. And that was with Megan Hilty. And
right.
So get it if you're back in New York, whatever, go a chance to see it. That too has these illusions that if you're a fan of the movie, you're like, how are they going to do that? And they do that. They make it happen. You almost have to. So it's so fascinating to see the kind of things here that the fact that it's on stage and not film is not a barrier for these amazing illusionists or whatever you call them who created this. It's just, it's done. Were any of you in the two-part version of this before it got shrunk down? Any of you in the, oh, so
yeah,
oh, you
all of us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So John, I'll come to you. So what is it? I never saw the two-part. COVID kind of hit. It was all sort of happening around that time. So that didn't get on my agenda for going back to New York. What is your sense? So far, everybody says we're happy with the one-part versus two. There's lots of economic reasons to do it, certainly. But with that convergence, you can each speak to this. But was this a good thing to do? Or do you miss sort of like in a perfect world, we'd still have two parts?
Well, I mean, I think the cool thing is that it does still exist in two parts in London. So if anyone, you know, happens to be out there who has seen the one-parter and thought, I really want to know what's different about it, you can go to London and it is still playing there in two parts. And so that version of the show still exists. You know, of course there are little things that I might think, oh, I wish I could say that or do that. But for the most part, I think what is really remarkable about this version of the show is that it's we're telling the same story. Almost the same number of illusions are in the show. It's jam-packed with all of this action and illusions. And but remarkably, I think it still has this heart that you know, you'd think could get lost when you're trying to just cut things down and it make it, you know, zip, zip, zip. And but I really do feel like this version of the show has all of that. And it's, you know, I've actually done it. This is like kind of my third iteration version of the show that I've been a part of. And so it's, and I really love this version of the show. And I think it holds all of the same heart and magic and kind of action that the two-parter does.
So, man, it sounds like from what John is saying, it's not that we really lost any major plot lines or anything. Is everything that you do in this version, did we see it at some point in the two parts? It is a truncated version. Is there anything new in this version that we say, to be honest, if you went to London, you'd actually wouldn't see this?
Ooh, that's a good question. Is there anything new?
Or that isn't in the two-part in London?
Right. Not that I can think of. I mean, you guys correct me. Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Different versions of
exactly.
Scenes and things like that where you go, oh, that's it. Or like there are certainly different transitions in between the scenes and some of that. So we have this. So I wanted to say this earlier, too, that this incredible team, it's, you know, to create the illusions, it's not just the illusions team. It's the movement team, the lights, the sound,
our incredible
crew backstage and our incredible ensemble of cast members who, you know, none of this could happen without this huge team of people every night doing all of these things to make it happen. And it does take this incredible team and everybody is on their game. And so it's really, it's amazing to be a part of that every night.
You know, you just said something so important. I almost forgot this, but Ebony, there is this soundtrack that plays underneath almost the whole show, which mm-hmm. to me is the, that's the, almost the film connection. You know, we don't even pay attention when we're watching a movie that there's often this soundtrack that's going along with everything. And so this is not a play where there's sort of silence and the actors are just talking. There is a music track, or I guess you have to call it a soundtrack. It's not all definitely music, but there is something that's underlying in between. So number one, does that ever mess you up? I mean, because that has to mean that your timing has to be good, right? Depending on where the track is and stuff. Isn't that put a little pressure to make sure you get your timing just right?
Not so much pressure. It sort of has merged itself and become one beautiful entity for me. It's music of image and heat, and it is sort of beautifully woven and scored throughout the entire show. And there's moments, I feel like, you know, when I'm talking to John backstage, there's one scene in particular, and you would think that it was a musical because nobody is singing, but the pitch of what is happening in the scene is underscored so beautifully by the music. It's almost as if, you know, whoever the particular actor is about to burst in song. So it's actually really, really gorgeous.
Matt, you want to add in anything to that music track?
Yeah, it's, I'm constantly, I mean, even if I'm backstage, it's like you said, it's ever present. And it's like, it paints pictures that I don't think we're all fully aware of all the time. But if it was to not be there, it is one of those aspects of the production that there would be a gaping hole there, because it is just part and parcel of the entire story we're telling. To me, it's another aspect. It's like another one of the illusions, because it transports you on whatever the adventure is or whatever, you know, it's another level of what the characters are feeling, even if nothing is being said. I mean, like a musical. I mean, there's many, many aspects, the choreo in it, the musicality of the piece itself, I think. It's another reason I find it to be a very unique, special piece. Because a lot of people, and understandably so, I mean, it's like Broadway in Chicago, it's a Broadway show. A lot of people, we often joke, a lot of people assume it's a musical, and then they're like, where are the songs? But it does, the way it moves, I feel like it does live in that world in a lot of ways. It's just a really beautiful part of it.
Yeah, I have to say, before I knew anything about the show, going back to at least the New York days, I thought it was a musical too. I just figured it would.
Right.
But it is not that, though. It has great music. John, talk about the relationship between your generation of characters and the younger ones. I did, as I mentioned, get to interview the younger folks. They were just charming to interact with and stuff. But is there an extent that you have to work with, you know, with your son in the show, and or maybe you work with the director to do this, but you know, you can't just have this son that has no connection to the dad, right? This is the same character. Well, not the same character, but it's that your character has grown older, but this is now somebody who has to be your son. How did you all work on the relationships between the generations? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a great kind of luxurious, to me, rehearsal process. We call the sort of the main seven characters, we call them the Scoobies, because a lot of this play feels like a Scooby-Doo mystery.
I thought that's what you might mean. Okay.
Yeah. And so so we spent a week working with the Scoobies and a couple of other characters to kind of flesh out, kind of talk about, we just, you know, go through the play, talk about, you know, what the relationships are, what the scenes mean. And then, you know, sometimes it's just simple questions like, well, wait, who is this person and how does that relationship and what was the history of that? Because there's so much material to draw on that you think, well, wait a minute, am I remembering that right? In the fifth book, they met that person. So there's all of that. And then,
oh, yeah.
And then we had five more weeks in the rehearsal room in New York City to work with the rest of the ensemble and the cast and figure out movement and blocking and all of that. And then a couple of weeks of tech here in Chicago before we got to share it with an audience. So it is a process. And, you know, we have a remarkable group of younger actors playing the kids in this show. And getting a chance to work with them has been just a highlight. I mean, it's just they're open to ideas and bringing their own ideas. And, you know, I've I've seen this play a lot, and I've been a part of a lot of different company members, and they really are, and that's not to take away from anybody else I've seen do this play, but there's a special place in my heart for this group of young actors.
Well, they really are talented and just such energy, Elliot, and just great folks. Ebony, I'm sure curious when these young folks have to really look up to all of you. I mean, because you know you are seasoned actors. You've done all that you've done, Book of Mormon, and all the things that are in your background. Do you find yourself spending time with the younger characters and they want to learn from you? Talk to me about your experiences. I'm guessing in some ways, and I mean this nicely too, they want to be you in the future.
You know, one of my favorite parts about coming to work is those tiny moments and pockets of time backstage where at the beginning of every day, we do a company-wide warm-up and we sort of connect with each other and we physically warm up, we vocally warm up, but it also is just a nice time to sort of lay eyes on each other because the way that the show runs, if we didn't do that, sometimes there'd be people in the company like I literally wouldn't see them. So one of my favorite times is just to sort of check in with everybody and, you know, we sort of talk about our day and like, you know, things that are mundane or things that we're really excited to do in the show. I don't necessarily know that anybody wants to be me, but it's nice to just sort of have those points of
connection. I want to be you and Matt wants to be you. So there's a couple of hands going. John, maybe not, but the rest of us.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Oh, come on.
One of the things I really loved, and I think it was in the interview that Aiden and Emmett had with you, that first time in the
Emmett,
in the
you're part right. One. I said Elliot. That's right. Emmett.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I call him Elliot sometimes. He loves it.
Do that. Don't make me wrong.
They both talked about kind of the shadow of the older generation and the hope and the struggles that come with that. You know, speaking about Hermione and Harry and Ron and sort of then, you know, this story being about their kids and what their kids are learning and the adventures they go on. And I find it very true. There's that sort of learning from the older generation, but it's just as true that all these characters are learning just as much from the younger generation and their kids as the younger ones are learning from the older generation. And that's just so true in life and with this group of people as well. I hope they're learning good things from us. But I certainly know that I'm learning an amazing amount from them as well. And that's just, it's an incredible dynamic to get to be working with a group of people like that. It's great.
So Matt, you don't say I grew up with enough siblings around me, get away from me.
I grew up with enough siblings. I'll tell you that much. No, but it's a similar thing. It's that, one of my greatest joys in life is getting to see my brother and sisters, my siblings do the thing that they do. It's just like just as much enjoyment as getting to do the thing I do. It's a different aspect of it, but it's glorious. I love it.
Yes. And I was going to say you were wonderful and beautiful, but that wasn't even you. That was two other ones. So
three other ones at this point.
That's right. We got to throw that all over. John, when you look ahead to other projects, and after this looks like it's certainly going to have a special place in your career and something you're never going to forget. Do you see after something like this, do you sort of say, well, I can do Oklahoma now? I mean, is it a tough shift to go from something this intense and this meaningful for a lot of people to whatever that new project might be in the future?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to do Oklahoma.
Or do we not worry about that yet? Maybe we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am trying to sort of stay in the moment with it. And it so far has been, you know, the kind of most important and incredible job of my career so far. And so this, whenever I do sort of end my time with this show, I'm going to be sad. And, but I will look back on it with, you know, the most immense amount of gratitude to have been a part of it. And, I mean, I think the amazing thing about this show is that it does test every part of my sort of tool belt as an actor. And so I feel I continue to become a better actor by doing this show.
Ebony, you've also, you have a lot of musicals behind you too, Aida and Book of Mormon and all that. So I'm sort of curious, is this the breakaway from the typical Ebony project or it doesn't matter. You're happy. It doesn't matter what, you know, which stage you're on.
I'd say it's the latter. I'd say, you know, any party they want to invite me to, I'm down to go. But this is just, it's such a treat at this stage in my life and my career. So hopefully, you know, it's one of those things where I hope that I never have to choose. I'd like to be able to go back and forth between the two.
Well, the reason I ask is because you made the comment before about the music track, and you said, you know, when you're backstage, you might think it's a musical based on the track. And that suggests to me that you're fairly sensitive to the music piece of this. So, I'm sort of curious. I know you enjoy all that you're doing, but do you sort of, if their next project was a musical, would you say, send me back? Or it really doesn't matter what that next project would be?
I'm to be honest, it really doesn't matter. If there's something that it sort of draws me to a piece, either, you know, the creative team or the material itself, like I'm at a stage of saying yes. Like if it feels right, say yes.
I love it. Matt, out of curiosity, has there ever been a discussion? There are so many performing Muellers about we all should do something together. That has to be a Thanksgiving Day conversation, but we all need to do something together and let's make it happen.
There certainly has been. I don't know if it exists, so it might be something we have to come up with ourselves.
Well, you can do Fiddler on the Roof. I'll play Tevye, and you can all be my kids.
Great. I think that sounds great. I haven't gotten to do Fiddler, and I know all
you're
the
Golda,
songs.
By the so way, maybe, just to make that clear.
Yeah, so let's work on that. That sounds great.
No, but you do talk about that, a project, and I don't mean a project like let's do a concert, but there might be a musical, a something that would just be right for all of you to do.
And yeah, I mean, we're sort of, I feel like I hate to say it, but I think we've aged out of Sound of Music at this point.
Oh.
So
that would have been a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I don't, I suppose it sort of speaks more to my lack of knowledge of the current state of musical theater that I can't think of anything that we could all be in. But I don't know what it would be. So,
Wicked. We can make a few things work.
You work on that, and I'll get my notepad out, and I'll try to whip up something here.
I love it. You know, it's like,
it'd be a lot of fun. It'd be a wild ride.
And I know I'm kidding you a lot about it, but just the whole family thing, just for obvious reasons, and because you're all from here and all of that. But one thing that I get from all the Muellers I've talked to, there doesn't seem to be, if there's sibling rivalry or anything, it just doesn't play. I mean, you guys seem to all just not only love each other, but just encourage each other. You want to be in the front row of that audience for anything your siblings are doing.
Well, it's this business is a tough business. It's a tough job. You know what I mean? So that's always a part of it. And when you are, I mean, even with friends, there can be, you know, you can be up for the same thing. And that's just part of the gig, right? So it certainly happens with people you're related to, especially if you're, you know, close in age, but you're right. It really is true. I'm very grateful that we all do enjoy each other as much as we do, not just professionally, but in life as well. They are the most important people to me in my life. And I'm very grateful that, you know, we talk almost daily and like, and I get to be there in the front. Well, not the front row. I'm not a big fan of the front row, but
oh, okay. I am.
Maybe two or three rows back, you know, like,
I love it.
Yeah, that's good. I don't want them to have to see me in the front row. That's the biggest thing.
Well, yeah. I want to thank all of you. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child playing at the Niederlander through February 1st. Tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. Thanks for spending so much time with me. Let us go a little bit deeper in all of this. And I sure appreciate that. Break legs every night, guys. I know I'll come back and see you again. And I'll buy a wand this time.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.